podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the podcast of the mouth. I'm Janine Traber. I am a substitute for my colleague Louis today because he cannot be here, unfortunately. I am here in El Arenal in Mallorca right at the moment, and with me is Hazel Andrews, who's a social anthropologist and teaching in Liverpool. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here today and to have you as my interview partner. Hazel has been doing research on Mallorca as well, which is how we found her, which was very, very lucky to find someone who is doing something similar crazy like we're doing in Cologne. Or maybe it's not really crazy, but we can discuss that later onwards. Hazel is working in Magaluf, or has been working for quite a long time in Magaluf. And the last 2 days we've been walking around with her in El Arenal, showing her what the Ballermann looks like, where all the Germans mingle. And she has also shown us around in Magaluf and in Palmenova. They don't really belong together, or is that, are they one village? Are they one town? What would you describe that like?
Well, they're seen as separate places, but they run into one another. I mean, where's the division really? Perhaps in what people do there's a divide, but spatially, geographically, they're just so close, intimately linked.
Yes, intimacy is an important topic these days.
Yes.
And in Palmenova and Magaluf, there are mostly British people, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Which other nations would you find there?
You can find Scandinavians, people from Denmark, Norway, Sweden, French people, some Spanish, maybe one or two Germans, but not many. but very much the majority are what we would call British.
Yesterday you told Anastasia and me that it's also different parts of Great Britain where people come from to go to Magaluf and Palmenova. Which parts are they usually from?
Okay, so the resorts are seen mainly as Northern British, for people from Northern Britain. So when I was doing my research, most people came from places like Newcastle, Manchester, Scotland. Not so many from London. I mean, people came from everywhere, but predominantly from these northern towns, northern areas.
Okay. From what you've seen so far, how would you say, or what would you say have the Ballermann and Magaluf in common, or are they very different to you in your opinion?
What they have in common is, from what I've seen and of the Ballermann and what I've experienced in Magaluf, is the drinking culture, the sex as well, the availability of sexual opportunity. When we were in Magaluf, we could see that the season has really ended, so it wasn't as lively, wasn't as busy as the Ballermann currently is. But in the height of the summer, it's similar to what people are doing. Different spatially in terms of, I think in Magaluf it's quite enclosed in the main strip because you can't see the sea. The sea is parallel to the main strip, Punta Baiana. But here it's more open to the sea. The Ballermann is more open to the sea.
When you say the drinking culture is the same, can you describe a little what this drinking culture consists of and what do people usually do when they travel to Magaluf? What do they expect to do?
Okay, well, there's an emphasis on drinking alcohol. So you can drink 24 hours a day and you are encouraged to drink. There might be bar crawls. There used to be bar crawls organised by tour operators. One reason was that they could earn money for charging the tourists to take them around the bars. And the other reason they did it was to join in with the tourists, to befriend them, to encourage them to spend more money with the tour operators on excursions and trips as part of their holiday. So what I've seen in the Ballermann is, again, people just getting very drunk, people drinking a lot, young people, older people as well, but So yesterday when we were in the mega park, there was a group and there was one lad that looked clearly drunk and not very well. And his friends were actually behaving in the same way that I've seen friends in Magaluf behaving towards somebody who's clearly very drunk, like poking him and flicking water at him or flicking alcohol at him, you know, to sort of almost make them feel worse in a way. Yeah. So similar kind of activities and emphasis on drinking, it seems. And I think also tourists, well, Magaluf has this reputation as Shagaluf, and shagging refers to sexual intercourse. And so the idea that you can go to Shagaluf and you can have sex with somebody you don't know and with as many different people as you want, and it doesn't matter.
So it's first you get drunk and then you meet other people and then you end up having sex with a stranger somewhere. Is that the idea of a holiday?
Yes, that could, yeah, I think that would be something that people would expect to find. Yeah.
And was this idea something that was astonishing you, that you said, oh, that is something I find interesting, why do people do that? Or what were the reasons that you actually wanted to do research in this place? How did your idea arise to go there? And what was your first interest in the island?
Right, okay, well, that is an interesting question. So I was interested in why people want to travel. So this quote from Charles Baudelaire, French poet, so thinker in the 1800s, and he says, "It seems to me I would always be better off where I am not, and this question of moving is one of those I discuss incessantly with my soul." So it's the idea of moving. Why do we need to move at all? Why aren't we happy where we are? Why aren't we kind of grounded where we are? I did a master's in international tourism policy. So I was interested in issues of sustainability and solving problems and wanting to help people. And so naively, my thoughts were, you know, if I can find out why people aren't happy at home, then I can stop them travelling and then we won't have any of these development problems because there won't be any environmental impacts of tourism. It's always stupid and grand at the time, naive. And it was actually my PhD supervisor who suggested that I come to Magaluf.
Oh.
Because he had had experience of working on the island in what's called the EcoMost project, which was about sustainability. So he had seen this resort and thought that it would be a good place to do this kind of research that I was interested in. Because I have to say I hadn't really heard of it, actually. And so also I had the opportunity to come in 1997 to do a very short project, which was about issues of sustainability. So completely different from what my PhD was about. And that was because the Maltese government, well, the Maltese tourism authorities were interested in learning from the Calvian, the local authority. Calvia, the local authority that looks after Magaluf and Palma Nova, has won awards for its sustainability and green tourism program, which people do find very unusual to think that somewhere like Magaluf could be seen as sustainable. Yes. So my job was to find out about their policies so that the Maltese could learn from what they were doing. So that's really how it all started.
Your first visit in Magaluf was in 1997, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, and then you already saw this kind of drinking culture, party tourism, and all that stuff like that. And were you still interested in going on with the research then? Or what was it about this kind of party culture that made you want to come back?
I think it was less the party culture, but more the overt Britishness. And I have to say, I use the word British advisedly because it is a contested term, but it's just a convenient word to use rather than me keep saying Scottish, Northern Irish, Welsh and English. So I was interested in, there's lots of flag waving, the Union Jack, so many adverts for British breakfast. So again, as well as thinking about, well, why do people want to travel at all? Why do you want to come to Spain and eat food that's been imported for you from the UK?
Mm.
So these were the kinds of things I started to become interested in. So, you know, what was going on in this destination that was so British, but it's actually in Spain.
Mm.
So I was kind of both repelled and attracted.
Yeah. But then how much time have you spent in Mallorca in total?
So I first came in 1997. I came back in 1998, which is when I did the bulk of my research, and that was for a 6-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back in the following year for another month. And since then I've done shorter trips. In total, it's around 9 months, give or take a the odd day. I love Mallorca. I really do. And I'm glad to be back, actually, this week, because I do feel something about the atmosphere of the island that I like very much.
Mm.
But for me, it's a place of work, and I didn't find the field work easy. But because it is a place of work, if I come back, so I came back first time in 2015 for a family holiday, first time ever on holiday, not a holiday. But still I had to go and look at Magaluf.
Mm.
So there's always been that kind of like, do I want to come back for a holiday because I still feel obliged to go and look at Magaluf and Palma Nova? But my main attraction is the other parts of the island. Mm. So I would never go on holiday in Magaluf with my family.
I guess it's obvious, but you would rather not say it has become your second home, although you've spent so much time there. Because, for example, in our institute, we have a lot of anthropologists who do research on African countries, and they travel there a lot, and somehow, of course, they establish relationships with people there. They become somehow part of a society, and they form friendships and, yes, just simply relationships. So have you had a chance to build up that kind of relation to a place so that it might become a home? Or was it just that you were also glad that the fieldwork was over?
I think I was glad the fieldwork was over, glad to be at home. I know academics buy maybe a holiday home where they do their research, but one thing, I've never been able to afford that, but I haven't done that. I would say it's interesting that there's the people that I would call my informants were not necessarily people that I have very much in common with enough to build up a relationship that would go over several years. Mm. And it was interesting that in 1998, I got to know some people quite well, or at least I thought I did. And when I came back in 1999, they had already moved on, or they said that they didn't do that kind of thing anymore.
Mm. What were they doing, if I may ask? Were they into a tourism business, or what did they do?
A couple that I got to know quite well, one was a hotel entertainer, and one of them worked in one of the independent local like travel companies that organised island excursions and things like that. And they were quite party people.
Mm.
And I hung around with them a bit. And the next year when I came back, I thought, well, I'll hook up with them again, because there are places I haven't been, and if I can join with them, then I can go. Because being on my own, it was quite difficult sometimes to feel comfortable to access places.
Mm. It feels weird going to a club alone, for example,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yes, yeah. But when I came back the next year, although I did find them, they just said, well, we don't really do that kind of thing anymore. So they had...
What did they mean? They don't like going out to party anymore?
They didn't go out clubbing, no. They'd bought a dog, and they were kind of much more settled in a way. They'd kind of... were less partying, so that hadn't happened. Tourists who said that they would be back. And I believe them, because they always came.
Yeah.
It was like their 18th year, so why wouldn't they come for 19? But they didn't. Mm. So I'd kind of go to the same hotels or like that cafe where we were yesterday, and I never saw them again. There were a few people, so some cafe owners were still there. But also I think one of the issues is in the summer months, people are so busy, they're too busy really to talk a lot. So
it was hard to establish relationships that would last longer than one season, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Within the German culture, traveling to the Ballermann is something that is regarded as not very classy. Saying that you travel to the Ballermann, you immediately fit into a stereotype, and it does not inherit a lot of prestige, for example. So what was it like with your research in Magaluf? Have you ever received something like weird looks when you told people that you do your research in Magaluf there? Or have you maybe ever received criticism on doing your work in this very location as it being a marginalized place of maybe something like the lower class? Did you ever encounter something like that, and how did you react to such criticism?
If I try to explain my research to the tourists, which is what you're supposed to do as a for ethical reasons,
yes,
I would often be met with puzzled looks, or why are you doing that, or really, kind of bewilderment as to exactly what I was doing. So a bit of confusion and not really sure what I was talking about. And in some ways, not really very interested either.
Mm-hmm.
And then in academic terms, well, I have been criticised for poking fun at the tourists. I've been accused of belittling them, of laughing at them, which I actually don't think I do.
Mm.
I think I try to present what I find and to interpret it in a way that isn't. I mean, sometimes things are funny. I mean, some of the things that happen are just funny, and so we laugh.
About it? Yeah.
But it's not laughing at them, it's laughing at something that's happening. I have been told, well, this is just what the working classes do. So, why are you bothering with that?
Mm.
But I think that nothing is ever just anything. It can always tell us something about the social world. So those are the main things. It's concerns that I am somehow laughing at the people, or this is just the working classes, so it's not really important.
Mm.
And, you won't find any culture there. And yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Because even if it was just what the working class is doing, working class is still a huge part of the society.
Exactly, yes.
And so, yeah, if it affects such a big number of people,
mm-hmm.
it should be the most interesting thing
to
do research on. Coming back now, what do you think, is the place changing very much, or has the place changed very much, or is it still basically the same? That people come there to party and drink, and the places still, maybe some places look different, but the concepts are still remaining.
I think the impression I have is that the concept is still there of partying. One thing that surprised me, I think, was, but it may be just because it was so quiet, that there seemed to be less of the displays of Union Jack. When I've been in the past, it's been everywhere, lots of displays of the Union Jack, and there seemed to be less of that flag waving, but it was very, very quiet. So the season has definitely seems to be shorter, and I think has been for some time, because when I came in 2009, it had already become shorter by then. But Magaluf still has a reputation for this party hard sexual activity, behaviour that is seen to be inappropriate or antisocial in some kind of way, whatever these terms mean. Still, the papers, tabloid papers in the UK, have sensationalist headlines about what happens in Magaluf. You can YouTube things that people put up about what happens. I think one of the changes has been that perhaps I don't recall seeing adverts for stag and hen parties being welcome in the past. But when I was here in 2015, that was evident. So, I mean, as we've discussed, people started to go to other places, like Sunny Beach in Bulgaria. And so maybe to fill the slot more, people come in for shorter breaks or hen do's in places like Magaluf, where before there was less of that or it was less prominent. Or maybe, perhaps this is a question to ask someone, is you advertise it because other places don't want a big group of people intent on partying.
Mm. Yeah.
So it could be that.
Within the last 2 years, the Balaman has been very much affected by a new policy that is trying to upmarket the area around the beach, and the hotels have been renovated and more expensive so that only people with more money could afford staying there actually. And so they are trying to gentrify the Balaman very much because of its bad reputation that it had in the past, and they don't want all this scandalous behavior here anymore. Do you see something similar in Magaluf?
Well, it's interesting because after the infamous, or by now infamous, Mamading incident of 2014.
Can you maybe quickly explain what that was about?
Okay, so when the tourists go to the bars, they're encouraged to drink a lot, and there's often game playing, sexual position games, simulation of sex, this kind of thing. And the Mamading incident was where a young woman was offered the chance of a free holiday if she were prepared to give oral sex to a number of men. Fellatio, that's a small term. So she did this, and I think there were around between 21 and 24 young men involved, in which she was seen.
Oh my God, that's a lot.
Sucking their penises, not to the point of ejaculation. And she believed that she would do this and she would get a free holiday. Well, the holiday turned out to be a cocktail, which was worth about €2.
Oh my God.
So this kind of activity was not particularly new, I don't think, to Magaluf. Or, I mean, if not that, it would be something else, like to women being encouraged to, straight women, heterosexual women being encouraged to give sex shows, lesbian sex shows to, for the gratification, you know, get their breasts out, things like that, expose themselves. So, but what was different in this occasion was the fact that somebody working in the bar, or one of the reps associated with the bar, filmed it or videoed it on his mobile phone, and he put it on Facebook, and it went viral.
Oh, wow.
So everybody knew what this young woman had done, and it caused a kind of moral panic in the UK. Headlines in the papers, it was discussed on radio and TV. There's a guy who does, I don't know, have you heard of Jeremy Kyle?
No.
Okay, so he does these programs. I don't know if you have them in Germany, but these programs where they get people on to talk about their problems in front of an audience.
Oh,
like, so yeah. You said, you're not the father of my baby, how dare you? And we will now do a paternity test.
Yes, we have that.
So Jeremy Kyle is one of the people who hosts one of these programs.
Mm.
So he came to the resort and to look around and discuss the problem of drinking and... Mm.
As a moral institution to help the tourists.
Exactly. He was concerned with underage drinking.
Mm.
And he got pepper sprayed while he was in the resort. And there's a YouTube clip of it. So a lot of media attention and lots of discussion about who was right or wrong. She was this uncontrollable female who had done this disgusting thing.
Mm.
Not that these guys had been willing to get their penises out in public and let somebody do that to them. That was okay. And I've actually seen some more extreme clips on YouTube as well of women being made to do quite unseemly things in these bar kind of party atmosphere. So after that, there was a lot, lots of press about we need to change Magaluf. Now, prior to that, I mean, when I first came in 1997 about this issue of sustainability, they were speaking then about changing Magaluf to make it more upmarket, to be more like Marbella for attracting a better class of tourist. So I was thinking, well, I wonder how much of it will change. I mean, prior to that, some hotels had become adult only. And then they said that they were introducing these policies and laws about not being able to drink in the streets. But I'd seen that already. They weren't supposed to do that anyway. Maybe they started to enforce, maybe there were bigger fines. But since then, still similar kind of sensationalist activities happening, being reported on YouTube. But it does suggest the need to go back during the summer and see what's going on.
So around the Balaman, there are a lot of West African migrants. For example, a lot of Senegalese men working as street vendors, or Nigerian men working as taxi drivers, or as security staff, or women working as hair braiders along the beach. Mm-hmm. They have become a very integral part also in the tourists' imaginaries of what the Balaman is like. So there are a lot of videos, for example, on YouTube, where you can see tourists singing with the street vendors on the beach. And it seems like they are integrating them within their party culture. Are they equally present within the British area of the island, if we call it like that? So are there also a lot of migrants that you can see in Magaluf? And are they a part of the party culture there as well? Do tourists interact with them? Or what is their role they play within this context of tourism?
Well, when I was doing my research, there were street vendors, but very few. There was one, I remember now, one lady, she was a hair braider and she had a kind of almost official position in the hotel. She was allowed to work in there. So that was in 98, 99. Here in Balaman, it's noticeable for me that there's a lot of street vendors, and I've never seen that many in Magaluf or Palma Nova. And certainly we didn't see any over the last couple of days. Although again, it may be because it's very quiet there now. So why would you, who do you sell to? So it would be, again, it would be interesting to come back in the higher part of the season to see if there's more there. But when I did my research, these were not people who were integrated. They were actively repelled. They were not liked.
Do you think that might have something to do with a difference between British culture and German culture, that here at Balaman they are integrated somehow? I mean, they are not really treated with a lot of respect in many situations, unfortunately, but somehow they managed to become part of this tourism experience. Do you think that has maybe something to do with being German or being British or being Scottish or whatever you might identify as, that the tourism expectation or the expectation of what a holiday is supposed to be is just different?
It's an interesting question and possibly too complex really to answer without thinking about it a lot, because the impression I got of the dislike of the street vendors was based on racism. And I don't think it would be fair to say that they're racist because they're British, because there are equally racist people in Germany.
Yeah, definitely.
And maybe this kind of integration in the Balaman is something to do with, we're on holiday and don't these people make it more exotic? You know, this is something not usual. And I mean, the whole idea of integration, given issues of migrancy and, you know, the refugees, etc., which has become huge since I did my research. So
yeah, true.
I don't know that I would really like to say that it's a British or German distinction. There are certainly issues expressed about the home world of being, for some of the British that I met, being under threat from outside forces, which included immigrants, the EU, and that this was something to be feared and repelled, and that those ideas, of course, people bring with them. So if you encounter the other when you're on holiday, for these tourists, they're not interested in the other. They want their British bacon and sausages and their cod and their milk.
That's really interesting. Maybe that can be something for future research to work on.
Yes, yeah. And they come, they actually say, I feel more at home here than I do in the UK. And some of that, I think, is because the tourists were, we mentioned, from the north of the UK, but also predominantly white and predominantly heterosexual. In fact, one of the people I became quite friendly with who was working in resorts was gay. It was a couple I was talking about earlier, they're a gay couple, but they weren't allowed to talk about that in front of the tourists.
Mm.
In the hotel. The manager
didn't
want them to talk about the fact that they were gay. So the tourists couldn't know that the hotel entertainer was gay.
Wow. Mm. When I was doing some interviews in El Arenal and along the Balaman, very often I had the feeling that people were maybe not willing to talk about intimacy with me. So for example, when I was doing research on sex work and their customers maybe, I was really trying to find out what are the motives or what are the reasons that people go to sex clubs, for example. And then I very often somehow had the feeling that I was not supposed to know that and that I was trying to invade a part of something that is very private to them. Mm-hmm. And that I was, that I was just not supposed to ask those kind of questions. Maybe because I was a woman. I am a woman. maybe because I am a woman. Maybe I don't live here. Maybe I'm not a sex worker or for whatever reasons. So asking those questions sometimes felt like being very voyeuristic.
Right, or too invasive.
Maybe. Yeah, or too invasive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sometimes have the feeling that doing research on Magaluf and party tourism there and watching all this drinking behavior or morally difficult topics was voyeuristic? Can research be voyeuristic, or is it just right to do all of this for scientific reasons? What do you think?
Well, participant observation, I think observing voyeurism is kind of goes with the territory in a way. And how else would we do it? I mean, part of participant observation is to get to know the other from the insider perspective. And one way of learning is to observe how people do things so then you can behave like that yourself. I mean, I didn't behave like that. I mean, I had my limits, but certainly things like I changed the way I dressed. So when I first arrived, I changed the way I dressed. I also eventually changed what I was drinking so that I fitted in more. And these are ways to explore important questions, I think. We have elements of the population who behave in a way that some people find unacceptable. Well, how do we find out why they're doing that, what it means to them, unless we do this kind of research? Questionnaires won't do it. And I personally don't have a problem with it. Of course, you don't... I mean, we are guided by ethics. We don't want to harm people as part of our research. We don't name them. Unless they want to be named. I mean, and some people, you might name somebody official, you know, representing an organisation. But I think it's, personally, I find it okay to do this kind of research. And I don't know how else it would be done, because to try and do it any other way, I think, wouldn't get the same richness of data that I think we need. And if we were to extend the idea of, you know, research needing to have some kind of problem solving or some kind of solution, which I have to say I'm not so interested in saying, well, how can we resolve these problems? Then we need to understand them first. If there's problems of racism, then unless we speak to people, allow people to express themselves, how otherwise would we define them or know what they're talking about? But yeah, I mean, you have to, I mean, I think it goes back to this question of, you know, how do people react? And if people thought I was laughing at the tourists, you know, you're there to make fun of them, then that's where the voyeurism maybe could become a criticism. But as long as you're not doing that kind of thing, I think it's okay.
So by taking on the same clothes, for example, like the other tourists, or like doing the same things they do, that could be an answer maybe to those people who accuse one of laughing about the tourists. You can say, okay, I'm just doing the same thing. I'm trying to understand them here.
Yes.
Really, really true. So we're at the end of our time now. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you, Hazel, for being here today with me and answering to all these very difficult questions. And thank you for sharing your time.
Okay.
And hope to meet you again soon.
Okay. You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.